welcome to Ammo Kenzoku, episode 69. We are a group of four Bubblegum Crisis Boomer otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and any other related subjects we find interesting. The Kenzoku are...
Hey, hey, I'm Nick.
Hey, y'all, I'm Mike.
Dylan.
And I'm this evening's host, Sam. Today, we are recording this episode on April 17th, 2025. And today, we are just talking about the whatever-related subjects we find interesting. And so, with that, Hashin. Okay, so I just wanted to start us off with, we haven't talked about shows for like the last couple of seasons, or for a while at least. And so a couple of stuff has ended, a bunch of stuff has ended, new stuff has started. First, I wonder, did anybody watch Zenshu?
I did.
Not all of it.
I watched all of it.
I just finished it last night. I don't want to spoil it, so, you know, because especially since not everybody here watched it. But I will say I felt like it was animated super well. I really liked the kind of homage to like famous animation cuts like they had every episode. I don't know about the plot. The plot was kind of, I don't know. I stopped kind of caring. The end did hit pretty hard though. So like it was well executed, even if it felt kind of empty in the end. I don't know. Was that your kind of experience, Dylan? How did you feel?
I watched it semi-begrudgingly, and I kept through the end, and I got to the end of the show, and I was like, there was no point to watching this show.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. I was like, oh. But I agree. Like, there was really cool stuff. It's one of those things where I think of like, oh, would I recommend this show to someone? I think I'd say no. I'd be like, there's better things to watch.
This show, I mean, obviously for me not being able to finish it probably is an indicator, but it's kind of the modern day epitome of just because something is easy on the eyes, if the plot doesn't like keep me in, then I can't finish it. Like, I would rather watch a poorly animated show that... Mm-hmm. enthralls me than an incredibly well animated show that has little substance, and this kind of for me falls towards the latter. I will probably make a feeble effort to try to get through, just because your kind of hints that the end actually kind of threw a curveball kind of interests me. But yeah, it's, I don't know, it seems like it's every year there has to be a show that's like that. For me personally, where it's like everybody's like, oh man, the show is great, it's so well animated. I'm like, yeah, but it's just, to me, it's just well animated. That's really all it is to me.
I mean, I think that's pretty much it. I wouldn't expect a curveball in the end. I just think that it emotionally, I think it delivered in the end. Like, the even though like kind of I felt empty about the plot, I still think that like it managed to tug on my heartstrings.
I see.
Even if afterwards I kind of felt like, well, that was pointless, you know.
And, you know, I'm not asking for, like, a masterpiece every single show. Like, to, you know, not to jump the topic too far, but, like, I'm up to date on Sakamoto Days. That show is hardly a, you know, original concept by any means. But it's fun, a fun watch, and it's animated okay. So,
So, I guess we could kind of slide into that. Like, is it just okay animated, or...
It's... I'm a little harsh on it. It's fine. Like, I don't think it's animated exquisitely all the time, but there are cuts that are entertaining, mostly because the whole gimmick is, like, he's, like, you know, this middle-aged, overweight, like, you know, convenience store clerk, but he still, like, has all the moves to an extent, but obviously he has some of the trappings of going middle-aged, like, you know, stiff shoulders and... all that. And then the whole gimmick of like, if he is active too far, then he actually like loses all his weight and goes back to looking like his young assassin self is kind of a funny gag. But yeah, it's almost like a Spy Family. Like, it's really easy for me to recommend Sakamoto Days to people. It's got a huge reach. It's well enough animated, and it's got likable character enough, completely silly and predictable plot, but it's still, I would say, fine in that sense. Like, is it, you know, show of the year candidate? Hardly. But I enjoy it just fine. Where I'm up to down it versus where Zenshu, I just can't.
Yeah.
Get myself. Well, to I mean, finish just it.
Describing it like Spy Family, that sounds, and not having watched Sakamoto Days, I mean, that sounds interesting to me, right? Like, kind of the plot is kind of eh, but it's still entertaining and animated pretty well.
I would say if it watch the first two eps, that's a strong indicator how it'll follow. And okay, it pulls a few things that actually broke the cliche that I thought it was going to do. So it's not like 100% predictable, maybe like 85% predictable. So that 15%, you know, does keep me being like, oh, I wonder if this, oh, that's like, for example, it's like, oh, that's a character interaction I didn't expect there, huh? And, you know, that kind of keeps me interested. So, yeah, okay. It relatively easy to recommend. Honestly, this particular, wait, are we on winter or spring now? I don't even know. Are we on spring? On spring, I think
we're,
huh?
Spring.
Yeah, so from last season, it's probably the only one that I'd be like, yeah, I can recommend it to most people.
Is anybody watching anything from spring or spring season, the new season, that stands out or seems interesting?
I'll let Dylan go first.
So I still have not watched any of the TV of Gundam G.
Oh, I got opinions about that.
I haven't watched any of that yet, so I'll just say I haven't done that. The new Catcher in the Ballpark series is, the animation is pretty terrible. The baseball animation for most stuff is awful, but it's got its charms, you know? It's one of those things where, like, it's not really well done, but it actually is kind of a fun, charming show, so I'm gonna stick with it. I expect much out of it? No, but that's fine.
Sounds like what I was hoping for.
Yeah, it's silly. It's fun. What are the other ones that I started a little bit? I'm curious on Anne Shirley, the new Anne of Green Gables. I might actually try and watch that with my wife, just because, like, she's a huge Anne of Green Gables fan. So I'm kind of curious on it. I haven't seen it at all yet.
Something I know nothing about, so I had no feelings.
Yeah, other...
Likewise.
I'm scanning through MAL here for spring. Other ones I'm curious on that I haven't gotten into seeing anything yet. I still haven't finished season one of Shoshimin. But season two is there. I'm excitingly looking forward to that as I continue to watch that show. And what's the other... Guilty Gear. Dual Rulers.
I need to start that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched the first did I watch the second ep yet? I don't remember, but first ep was pretty good. I liked it.
Good. I'll cut in there.
Yeah,
so
I'll cut in.
Yeah. So I'll start with Dual Rulers. So what, trying to be as objective as possible, because for those unaware, Guilty Gear is like my favorite game franchise, period. And I even said, I think for the Kenzoki episode, Dual Rulers was my most anticipated. That being said, I can say this is definitely the Guilty Gear anime made for long-time Guilty Gear fans. I will say that if I was coming into this, I'm really interested to see, like, I don't want to, like, force Mike into it. I'm really interested to see, have Mike watch Ep 1 and tell me if it made any sense, because I feel like it just throws a whole lot of characters and, like, the 25-year history of Guilty Gear at you in, like, 3 minutes. And
yeah,
easy for me.
Person in this podcast who has pretty much no Guilty Gear experience whatsoever, that would be interesting. I'll do that and report back next episode.
Awesome. Yeah, I'd be interested to see. Although, I feel like it's fine for non-fans to an extent, if you're willing to be like, okay, so we're being inserted into a story that's very, with characters that are very established and very, have already gone through many, you know, self-discovery and, like, a lot of baggage and have come to, you know, be comfortable in their own skin. Like, a lot of, and that's the thing that I like about it as a long-term fan, is the characters are in the state they are in the current game timeline of just before Strive, basically, which is where this series takes place, is between Exert and Strive. So from that perspective, I think it's pretty cool. Sanjigen actually did a pretty good job with the animation, I would say. The 3D in it is not, like, jarringly abhorrent, and overall, I would say, with the exception of a couple of odd angles for one specific character in the first ep, I would say that nothing really kind of took me out of just, like, enjoying it and being like, man, I waited 30 years for this, and you know what? It's pretty good. I'm happy with it. It could have been way worse, and as a Guilty Gear fan, I definitely give it my support. The ratings have seemed being pretty bad, but I think that's a lot of it's coming from, like, people that were, I think, expecting something unrealistic is my take on it. Going to G-Quex.
The people who were lost.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about G-Quex, because I've watched... So, two eps are up right now. I mean, we already talked about the movie at length, so I don't think anything in the first few eps will be spoiler, but I mentioned it, I think, in our chat. The TV series opens up with what's effectively part three of the movie, which is just right as you get introduced to Machu and the time jump, basically. Which I'm like, okay, I get it. There, she's the face, you know, she's on the key art. So I get that part. But then as I watch, it reminded me, like, they use enough language and reference to the early parts of the movie that it basically slowly, like, lets the surprise out in, like, not a grandiose, like, the analogy I can use, if when you watch the movie, within the first 5 seconds, it's like somebody, you walked into a room and all the party poppers go off and it's a huge surprise party, like, whoa, 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 what is this? This is wild. With this one, it's almost like, it's the analogy I use is you're walking home and somebody left, like, the curtain open and you can see some partygoers are already in your place. And you're, like, thinking, like, oh, this is going to be fun, but it kind of spoils the surprise. That's how I felt as somebody who's watched the movie and now is watching the TV series. It's not bad, obviously. It's the same exact footage, but I was a little disappointed. I mean, for me personally, it's great. It's like, yeah, I got to see it in its original form. That's cool. I can flex. But, like, for the vast majority of people now, they're going to be, like, this is a weird way to tell the story, is how I feel like they're going to feel. So we'll see what the verdict is. I think the initial response has been okay, so we shall see.
So I was just curious to, so now that you've watched the second episode, can you report as to what they did with the ordering? Is it really like they pick up at this, like the second episode is really the first part of the movie?
And then the third episode will be the second part, and then the, yeah. So basically, if you were to split the movie into four segments, the air order TV would be 3, 1, 2, 4.
Okay.
Which is a little weird to me.
Yeah.
A little bit. But again, I'm just waiting a while now to see until we can actually watch something, you know, new content.
Yeah,
wise.
Yeah,
I'm interested to see really where they go with the whole Char thing, so.
Cool. I haven't watched much new stuff yet. I did start watching, I think it's called Dinner Time Detective. It's a mystery thing. It's on Amazon. It's kind of a goofy, disposable cliche, but you know, it's fun. If you like those kind of like Detective Conan type things, then it's exactly that, with, you know, its own unique twist.
Oh,
I love those kinds.
Sorry to interrupt. Last thing, you mentioned Detective. Also, I watched I didn't even know this was coming out, but the first ep of Yaiba, which is Aoyama Gosho's manga he did before Meitante Conan, and is now getting, well, it technically was animated back in the early 90s, and I guess this is a reboot, because I saw him like, oh my gosh, this is Gosho for sure, because like the character designs are very obviously, you know, look like Conan characters. Like, there's literally a character that looks just like Ron. So,
it is funny that we have Ranma and then this show, and then there's going to be more Ranma.
Yeah, right. And Wit did it too. So the animation's actually quite good. So yeah, that was a kind of a pleasant surprise. I love the key. I mean, I love Gosho's art style. Like, I feel like it's this almost Takahashi-esque, where it's like this classical style that's survived the test of time. And he always uses really great color palettes and stuff. So,
the thing about Gosho's skill in particular is Gosho is like, oh boy, what's the guy's name? Monster, 20th Century Boys.
Urasawa,
yeah. He's like Urasawa, where like, because of the stuff he does, he has to draw lots of different people all the time. And he's just really good at just drawing. It's a weird skill to have, but like,
no, I get what you're saying.
Being able to construct a rando is a interesting skill.
I totally agree. Yeah, I completely agree. He doesn't like just draw random silhouettes for people. Like, he actually draws a lot of background characters and introduces characters that are only going to be there maybe for, especially Conan, right? Like, he's probably made 10,000 characters that are ultimately survive for like an episode and then get murdered. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Most of them die.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I thought that was neat. And, you know, I mean, obviously this is all reboot stuff coming from, you know, my childhood. So it's cool to see it being done. So, you know, this is for me, I guess, air quotes, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Dylan, you said you started watching Shangri-La Frontier Season 2, and you had some thoughts?
Yeah, so I started watching it, I think, after a while back. You guys said it was good, and it's a fun show. The first season is fun, and it's another stupid video game show with the lowest of possible stakes. It's not even like a Sword Art Online where you die in the game, you die in real life. It's just,
yeah,
there's zero stakes. And at first I was like, you know, it's kind of cool. But then I realized some stuff as I thought about it more and it's gone on, which is it's the main character, you know, he wears his stupid bird mask, which I'm like, that's kind of funny, goofy thing. But then I realized with that and the advancing of it, it has really become a super harem show, like way more than it felt like it was going to. And then I also realized with the mask being worn that it makes it like the, you know, like the main character in Two Heart or whatever, where you never see the guy's face.
Oh, the hentai protagonist with the, like, the shaded eyes. And
Yeah, it's like the same thing, except they're kind of cheating it out here where he's, you know...
Wow, that's a wild observation. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, he's like super, you know, he's of course, you know, because he's in the game, he's super buff. The other thing I realized is that, like, this game would be no fun at all to play. Like, because if you're not, like, one of, like, the top 10 players in the entire game, there's, like, there's no point to you even playing the game. Because you can't actually, like, advance the story or do anything. And I know they kind of focus on these, you know, the superstars that would basically be...
I mean, to be fair, he is doing, like, the ultra-rare side quests. So, like, ostensibly there is a normal, quote-unquote, like, storyline that people see.
There is, but there's so much. It's obviously, it's all for the stuff. You know, if you kind of think of it as like, oh, man, this person's going off. But it also, I just get so many feel bads from it, being like, oh, you got a unique quest. And, like, the only reason he's able to do all this stuff is because he completely cheats at the game and gets unlimited access to instant teleport to the super secret world that nobody else can get access to. And I would just have a big no fun playing that game.
Yeah. For sure. I would hate it. And, you know, it is kind of funny how it never takes him two tries to beat anything. It's always on the first try. It may take a while, but he basically always does it the first time.
Yeah. It's just... And then he's, you know, one of the other people is like a professional gamer, but he's like so much better than him. And this spring break, their summer break he's on has gone on for a very long time.
Yeah. He's basically like just playing the game constantly. I don't know how he goes to the bathroom at all those energy drinks and then laying.
Oh my
bed.
God. There's no way he actually looks like that in real life.
Yeah.
He's just an amorphous blob.
That's what he would really be. I do like I probably said this a zillion times, but I kind of like the gimmick of he's really good at games because usually he plays very bad games. And so, like, he's just very good at, like, finding bugs and exploiting them and kind of dealing with really bad controls and stuff. So
he's like the Kusoge master, right? That's like his whole
gimmick. Yeah, exactly. Image. Yeah.
Yes. And it's fine. They kind of drop that gimmick after a while and stuff. But anyways, it's still fine. I haven't finished season two, but that's had that realization. I'm like, oh, this has just become like a total harem anime. Okay, got it.
They don't totally drop that gimmick about being the Kusoge master. It does come up later. It's not as big, but like one thing that's kind of interesting is, I guess depending on your perspective, is they do go into other games. Like,
yes,
he goes back to an old game that he used to play, At one time he goes back to an old bad game, and another time he goes back into an old, like, okay game, and then now he's playing a fighting game, which is weird, but interesting. And it's funny because in the latest season, he has to go out and do some stuff IRL and meet up with these, his, you know, people he plays with in the game. And instead of showing them his face, he wears a stupid mask. So he's like, never see his face. They just try really hard to not show it. That's an interesting perspective there that I hadn't thought of. It does really kind of become a harem thing, even with his rabbit NPC character. Any other fun anime stuff you guys watched?
So I will, this isn't new, but I will say first and foremost, Sam, I actually probably owe you an apology because I know I've mocked you incessantly for watching a particular show. And
which one?
And Dylan, you called it. It's I started watching Umamusume because I saw the trailer for the current season, I think Cinderella Grey, and I was like, this actually kind of looks pretty hype. And I decided to put on Ep 1 Season 1. And I didn't know PA Works animated it, so that's already a plus. Ep Season 1 gives me big Akiba Maid War vibes. Like, the main character 100% feels like Nagomi to me. But I will say, while the whole racing shtick thing is cool, and the whole being reincarnated horse, you know, famous horses thing is fine by me, the once you win, you do the idol concert thing is still the most absurd part of it. I'm like, this is really dumb. It's I'll tolerate it. I'll completely tolerate it, but it is dumb. But the racing part, I'm all about that. That's super hype. So, yeah.
How far are you?
I'm only like 3 eps into season 1.
Okay.
So I've just started. But
have you seen Gold Ship? Gold Ship is the best character.
I think so.
She's got the white hair, and she just always does weird stuff.
Oh, yeah. The one that
she starts off season 2 riding on a Segway everywhere, which is like, okay.
But yeah, so yeah, I'm not saying that it's good, but so far I'm enjoying it. So
yeah, it's not good. I certainly wouldn't say that, but it's a fun show.
Yeah, I can go. Yeah, it is goofy. It is not 100% what I thought it would be. So it's not degenerate really at all. So
yeah, actually, it is not degenerate.
Yeah, I would say it's on the similar level as Akiba Maid War, honestly. As far as that, it's like it infers a lot of stuff, but it never pulls the trigger on it. So that's fine.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair comparison.
Yeah, I can understand why the mobile game has generated, like, I don't know, $3 billion since its launch. Knowing Japan's obsession with horse racing and also this property, and idols. So
I one thing I wonder about that show that I was thinking about recently is because they use real horses, like, as the models for these, like,
inspirations, right? Yeah.
Well, yeah.
They're all like real horses in Japan. Yes.
Yeah, they're based on real racehorses.
Correct.
I wonder if they have to pay anything for that, or if they're just like, you know, just, hey, that's cool to have our horse represented in this game.
I wonder if Cygame has just used their leverage and just went up to an association like, hey, if you want to just use these names for the show, we'll give you this one-time licensing fee or something.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe some deal with the racing association. That would make sense. Cool. Yeah. Well. Cool. We'll all be watching Umamusume before the year is over. I'm going to continue with season 2, so maybe you'll catch up to me. Any other anime type stuff people want to talk about?
I don't know if it came up on the podcast before, and I still haven't finished watching it yet from winter. The it's on High Dive. The From Bureaucrat to Villainous, Dad's Been Reincarnated.
I love that show.
It's actually pretty great. It's fabulous. Isn't it? Yeah. So a total, like, kind of like an older, like, not video game otaku, but kind of like an otaku dad gets the classic video game reincarnation. He literally gets reincarnated into his daughter's otome game and he gets reincarnated as villainous, but then he plays it like an actually like really competent, like good person bureaucrat, and it's fabulous. I can't wait to see it where it ends.
It's also very pure. Yes, like it's not degenerate at all.
No, it is not.
I love it.
Yeah, it's great. So that one is definitely good.
It's very, like, I would even say it's heartwarming a lot of times. Yes. Because he's like, he's playing this evil villainous and he's like being so supportive. He's trying to get the main character to marry the prince and like, but like, it's just, it's so good. I just really love it. And meanwhile, like his wife and daughter are like playing the game and like trying to help him out. This is so great. So goofy.
Yeah, it's fabulous. It's just what anime needs. It's just it's the video game cure that anime needs.
Yes. This is an isekai I accept.
Yes, I accept.
Also has probably one of the best endings.
That's pretty good. Pretty good. I will put up there also with great endings is the ending animation for Catch Me at the Ballpark. The animation is...
Oh yeah,
fabulous!
I have it's watched.
Really
that.
Cool. Oh, I will say, G-Quook's op-eds are like, oh man, chef's kiss. I had high expectations. They met them. So yeah, you guys definitely should get to watching. Unfortunately, as far as I can tell, it's only on Prime, which is
pretty crappy. Yes, it is. But it is a Prime exclusive. Realize that tonight.
We'll tolerate it, but yeah, still the op-eds are quite hot. So highly recommend.
Oh. Although I did notice, because the Dinner Time Detective thing is an Amazon one also, they're not showing commercials in the middle anymore. They're showing them only at the start, at least for me.
Okay.
Is that for me the same for you?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I'll take it.
Good. Because, I hope that they keep that, because before when I watched stuff on Amazon, we would get ads in the middle at the eye catch, and I hated it. It just takes you way out of it. But now, yeah, it's just... They just get them over with at the front and then you just watch straight through. I love that.
Nice.
So good job, Amazon. You're getting better. Cool. Well, I guess we've all been maybe watching a little bit less anime, so we haven't had a lot of that to talk about. And, well, what anime we have been watching too, we've been talking about in previous episodes. But there's been some game stuff going on, and we all like games, right?
Definitely.
Switch 2. That's like the big thing right now, and there's a lot of interesting things going on there, and I'm curious about your thoughts, Nick. I think you had some feelings to express.
Yeah, like I will say first, I am not that outraged at the price compared to I think the vast majority of people, but I don't think that I'm also looking at it from my current position, which is like obviously I can afford it. So like it is pricey. More so, I think they're kind of Nintendo's being the first major developer to breach the current $70 barrier of what a premium title should be, because I think Super Mario Kart World or whatever they're calling it is going to be $80 MSRP unless you buy the bundle, which is I think just more of a mechanism to force people to buy the bundle, because the way the game is structured, they need a huge player base installed. So, that's my suspicion, because I don't think any of the other games have been listed at that price point, as far as I can tell.
Not that I saw either. Plus, it's probably is like the premier thing, because that Mario Kart ended up being like basically the premier game of the Switch. Like,
right,
as
it's going to be
as...
the box. Yeah, it's going to be the box bundle game that, I hope that everybody's going to get. Hope theoretically, right, with it. Other than that, I think I'm trying to think if any of the games were like WTF to me. None of them really came off. Oh, actually, there was that one game that I thought was going to be like the freebie, but ended up being charged. Like the one where you learn about how the Switch 2 works. I'm like, wait, they're charging for this? Nobody is going to buy this. Like, it's an encyclopedia.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, no, they can't charge for that. That has to be a bundle and free download or whatever, but
yeah, or like include it with the Switch Online or something.
Exactly,
like, that's weird. Who's gonna buy that?
Yeah, as far as game announcements go, the only one that I would say caused me to audibly WTF was, I'm sure Sam, you were similar, was the Duskbloods. That was I was like, oh, my immediate conclusion when I saw that it was a FromSoft game, I was like, oh, so Miyazaki got tired of Sony squatting on Bloodborne, so it just went to Nintendo instead.
Yeah.
was my evaluation. Although, I don't know if you read up on it, but it's actually going to be quite different. Like, the way it's going to play is going to be way more similar to that new Elden Ring DLC, where it's going to be like this hybrid multiplayer PvP VE thing. So I don't know how I feel about that, because I haven't really done that in FromSoft games. So I don't necessarily hate the PvP portion of things, but like, I don't know if it's going to work like being invaded, or if you're actually going to like, I have no idea. Like, there's so little known about the game right now, so I don't want to draw too many conclusions. I will say aesthetically, looks rad.
Yeah.
The big Bloodborne-esque designs, I think, are great. It looks like Bloodborne, as in the same era, so it looks like a PS4 game, which isn't bad. Don't get me wrong, PS4 games look fine to me. So,
yeah.
You know, and then obviously we're getting tons of ports that I didn't think would happen, like Cyberpunk and Elden Ring. I was like, wow. So this is going to have some real, like, oomph to be able to play those games.
I was impressed by, like, Elden Ring. I was actually mega surprised to see Elden Ring on there. To me, that was like a big sign that's like, wow, this thing can do it. I mean, it's probably not going to look as good as the PS5 version, obviously, but it'll
probably look still like the PS4 version, if I want to guess. And that's okay. The fact that the Switch, for some games, like, I heard at this, they had like a secret like hands-on event in LA this week, and people were saying we're playing the Metroid 4, and they said that that game actually supports 120 Hz, 120 FPS.
Oh, wow.
Which is like, whoa, they broke the 60 barrier with that one, and that's going to be like a flagship title, right? Like, Metroid Prime is definitely. And then people are saying like the mouse controls are actually like really intuitive. I don't think I will probably like it, just because my hands get sore using traditional ergonomic mice. I'm not about to try to use a tiny itty bitty Joy-Con that is pretending to be a mouse as a mouse. I'm perfectly okay using a controller as a controller, but other than that, you know, we have options, which is totally fine.
I'm curious with the mouse thing if that ends up being kind of like an interesting thing, or because it's so specific that it gets thrown aside in the way that games are developed these days.
My suspicion is that the mouse thing is going to probably open up a path for more, like, I wouldn't be surprised if within the first year or towards the second year they announce online Wii, like, legacy games as well. That's my suspicion, is that's where the mouse control gimmick is headed towards.
Oh, for the pointer?
Uh-huh. That's kind of...
That could be.
Because, obviously, the GameCube collection is cool. I'm like, oh, neat. That actually might be enough to get me to pull the trigger on the Level 2 subscription, where you get access to the more premier, like, library of games. So, yeah, well, but we'll see. The last thing I do want to talk about that I think maybe is controversial is, I don't know how much you guys have read up on it, but some of the games' physical versions aren't actually a true physical copy of the game. They're calling it like a game key, and it's a cartridge which basically has a unique ID tied to it that then gives you the download. And at first I was like, uh-oh, is Nintendo dabbling with this, you know, digital rights management? But then somebody pointed out an interesting notion that all the games that are confirmed to so far be this game key instead of a true game on a card are games that are perceived to be massive in size, as in game file size. For example, like big open world games like Elden Ring or the you know, any of the. So it's a suspicion is that Nintendo isn't able to put the game on the cart, so their solution was to basically make this game key that then triggers a download that gets installed into the online, or sorry, on the onboard memory, which is why the onboard memory is being like quadrupled, is probably because people have to download more games.
I feel like I'm 75% fine with it. The idea, like, if you can still like sell the game, or you give it to a friend or whatever, like, and it, you know, it works, functions like a physical game in that respect, I think that's good. And we're already kind of have with game updates, like day one updates. Like, the thing on the card is not really the thing you're playing anyways.
The idea, though, right? Like, if you're on a desert island with a Switch and no internet, you can still put the cartridge in and it'll boot and play in the base patch, right? Like, it won't be up to date, yeah. But you can still play the game. That's the defense, right, everybody has for physical versions. And I agree with that. But I'm willing to give Nintendo, and this is a lot, because Nintendo is famously very litigious, but I'm willing to believe that this was just a solution Nintendo was trying to come up with, because they're like, we know people like physical games, but this is not a reality with the cartridge format anymore, and they probably desperately don't want to go to optical disc, especially now, because there's basically only like one factory left that makes Blu-rays. So
jeez. And those flash, like, the games are basically on like flash cards, right? Expensive flash cards.
Yeah, very, so, like, it's all proprietary still. Nintendo history has always had, that has to be quite expensive. So I'm assuming that's where also some of the $80 price tag is going, is to offset the cost, because it's, their margin is getting smaller and smaller on cartridges.
Well, I mean, also, I think the industry as a whole is probably moving to higher price games, just because, I mean, we just had like 20%, you know, inflation, and games still cost more to make. They cost at least 20% more to make. So, like,
yeah, and honestly, far be it for me to defend, you know, like, microtransaction stuff, but when you think about how a lot of AAA games are now, like, the poster child is any shooter, right? Like, I'll call mm-hmm. Call of Duty. It's my favorite one to use an example. Yeah, you pay $60 for the game, but if you really want the full experience, you need to buy the season pass and whatever that stuff is. And that balloons the cost to $100 per year. That's really what it is. That's why I was paying to play Destiny every new expansion. Base game was $60, and then all the extra DLCs and dungeons and all that stuff added another $40 to it across a year. So it was really $100 a year to play. When you think about Mario Kart 8, that's a game that's going to get... Nintendo also famously adds DLC on the house a lot of times.
Yeah.
They don't always do paid DLC. They a lot of times will add up. Like, look at Animal Crossing. They have added so many updates to that game. They've never charged.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they've done some DLC, sure. But they're usually pretty, I would say, FromSoft-like, and that they're very robust and, you know, worth the money.
Yeah.
But I almost guarantee you that the Mario Kart world is going to be... have tons of updates and new maps and new courses, and they're probably not going to be like paid. It's just going to be updated, and you know, that's why the upfront cost is higher. That's my suspicion.
My guess is they'll, like, for 8, they deluxe, they did do the thing where to get the DLCs you had to have, you'd be subscribed to Nintendo Switch Online.
Sure,
but that was it.
I mean, you're going to need to be doing that now to play online anyway, so that's a prerequisite, right? No matter what.
I'm actually kind of hype for Mario Kart. I'm not really a Mario Kart kind of guy, but like, but with my, I have a Switch Lite, and I take that with me on trips and stuff. And I find that's just kind of my, like, my brainless game that I just put on to, like, just do something to pass time.
Totally, and it's just
awesome to zen out to that. And the Mario Kart world looks like awesome for that, just kind of like endless driving around.
Yeah, literally, it's first time they've been contiguous courses. That's, like, to me, mind-blowing. So
yeah, I think that's like I think, was it Forza Horizon or something like that did that, like,
yeah, the modern day, I would say the racer sim style games, like, yeah, Forza is probably the biggest one, where it's just not, you can just do infinite driving and just drive, you know, for hundreds of miles if you want. So
yeah,
I think they were thinking that, how can we adapt this into Mario Kart? And it looks like they hit it out of the park. So
one other interesting thing, well, actually I have two other interesting things I wanted to touch on with this. The first one is the chat feature. So, like, I'm not a big, because I don't like go game with groups generally, I'm just do solo all the time. How similar is that chat feature to, like, stuff on PlayStation or Xbox? Do either of you guys know
pretty similar?
Anybody?
I would say it, from what I could, what they've showed in their very curated thing, it looks more or less exactly the same. I am very suspicious of how good that noise canceling on that mic will be on the console when you're sitting 12 feet away from it. I really am not sure how the fidelity will be. I would assume that the best experience will be having a headset you plug into, you know, a Bluetooth headset or whatever you just decide to do to boost it. But, you know, I mean, it's not like you're forced to do it. I think it's about time Nintendo added a feature built in, baked in, that actually lets you do that, because especially for games like Monster Hunter, having that is it makes the quality of the gaming so much better.
Voice chat or
Just being like, hey, you know, anybody need sharpening stones, blah blah. Oh, hey, who needs what drops today? You know, like, it just makes it easier than trying to do it set up like where you have to have like Discord on your phone or whatever, and it just takes the extra steps out of it. So it's not going to force you to use it. So it's just Nintendo at least catching up to where the other, you know, where Sony and Microsoft have been for like the last 15 years.
Plus, the other part with that is that, whereas Sony and some of the others they've added more like Discord integration and things like that, Nintendo, I think, is much more cognizant of the call it like the under 15 gaming market, where they don't have access to getting stuff set up like that, or parents are like, no, you can't have a Discord account because I've seen the horrors that happen when young people get a Discord account, so you can't do that.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably also why they're not doing it, which would potentially be the easier way, is be like, oh, hey, we have a button that's the Discord button, but then they're also like Nintendo, and they don't like to be locked into other people's corporate ecospheres and reliant on Discord to provide stuff, or making it facebook.com/Nike. Like,
it's not great for their, like, not even just their brand, but yeah, like from a control perspective of like, if something goes wrong there, like you say, like, regardless of whether it's Discord's fault, it still looks like it's Nintendo's fault, which is, and then to not have control over that, just really bad for them. I like the game hangout style stuff. Like I said, I never used that stuff before, but it seems kind of cool. Stream games with your friends. The other thing I was curious what you guys thought about was the wheelchair basketball game.
Oh, that seemed
like the new Project Arms, but like with a worse design aesthetic, which was bizarre to me. Like, the game looks neat, but like it just looks bad, like just design wise. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Honestly, when I saw the, real talk. When Nintendo first released the Switch One, even I was pretty surprised Sega didn't immediately jump on board and be like, "Hey, new virtual on, guys!" Because you already have two.
Oh yeah.
But no, they never. You know, that IP has been left to languish. I don't get me started on that. But I feel like it was just Nintendo trying to come up, okay, we got this new feature, like, how do we leverage the feature, double mouse, you know, feature, and like, well, you know, I can just see them in the boardroom, like, well, what would you do with too many, like, people would start like, well, this feels like you're pushing a wheelchair, is there a way we can turn that into a game, and I can totally see the brainstorming session, you know, that occurred off of that, and I also agree, the game to me almost looked like it was some kind of, like, I like the concept, but the design and the fidelity of it looked really not great.
It's like a tech demo, really, right?
Yeah,
like,
tech 100%, demo. 100%.
Feels like a $10 or $5 or $10 something like that. It's like, hey, get this cheap thing, try it out. You'll have a couple hours of fun with it, and then you'll move on.
Polished tech demo from Nintendo at launch, you don't say?
Yeah. I mean, the thing that sucks is, I mean, it totally is like. You guys are saying where it's they saw this feature and they're like, how can we make a game around this? And but like they did that with the Wii U, and they did Splatoon, right? They built Splatoon around this feature of pointing your, you know, using the gyro controls to do stuff, and
which was awful, by the way.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't know, I was kind of indifferent to it. I think I leave the tilt controls on for that game, but the design of it and the execution of it was excellent. Like, right, like the game is super good.
I adore Splatoon as a game, a franchise, and as design, 100% agree. But I play it like a traditional twin stick shooter because the gyro controls are not for me. But I get what you're saying.
Well, and then Project Arms was like the next one I was going to say was on Switch, which is, okay, now we have these dual controllers, and so we'll build a game around that. And it's like, I never played that game. I was never really interested in it.
Now that you mentioned it,
the design was aesthetic was great.
Awesome, yeah. Actually, now that I mentioned that game was basically Nintendo's attempt at doing Virtual One. Like, when you think about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In some ways. Not all, but when it gets an arena fighter, you have characters mm-hmm. that have... They all control similarly, but they kind of have different, you know, gimmicks, like in a fighting game kind of style thing, so... yeah, I adored the design philosophy and the art aesthetic for it, but it just never mm-hmm. took off as, like, a franchise, yeah. unfortunately.
Yeah, but so, like, going from those two to this is like, wow, what happened? I don't understand. I kind of hope they, like, delay that game or something, but I'm not hearing a lot of people, saying anything about it, so, like, maybe just nobody, because it's so bland, nobody cares enough to even mention it. Like,
I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, not that I'm complaining, but Nintendo really showed a lot off, way more than I thought they would. Like, honestly, they could have just left it in Mario Kart world and people would have been content, but they showed off, like, Metroid Prime 4, like, a lot of it.
True.
And that, people have been waiting 20 years for that. So, you know, I was pretty surprised they kind of let so much out of the bag. But don't get me wrong, I'm glad they did. I'm super hyped for Metroid Prime 4. I love Metroid Prime. So.
Heck yeah. Is the Prime Trilogy available today still somewhere?
That's a good question. I actually don't know.
I remember it was out and you could buy it for a little bit, and then I feel like it sold out or you can't buy it anymore, but I don't know. I haven't looked into it. I should.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, if you find out, well, I'll probably check afterwards myself and see if I can find it. Because I would like to play those first if I can. If not, well, I know there are ways.
I still have my original release copy, first ed or whatever, of Metroid Prime.
Same.
Which has the unfixed version where you can do the reverse order and hop.
Oh, cool.
Basically do the game in reverse.
You can do the scan lag jumping, right? Where you can, if you hold the scan and you jump, strafe jump, you can actually sequence break it.
Yeah, I did it. I was able to, followed some videos back in 2000X and was able to do it. Yeah, it's like this weird, cool little, like, pretty pixel-specific, like, 3-pixel-specific hops when you're in, like, the first kind of, like, open area. And then you can go backwards, basically, through most of the game.
Yeah, honestly, that glitch was kind of one of the founding father glitches for, like, modern day speedrunning techniques.
Well, the bummer is, like, on the follow-up releases, they took that out, which is, like, it's so dumb. Like, why? It's like, would you ever, if you were just playing the game casually, like, ever find and try it and do that?
Nintendo logic, they didn't want even the potential, infinitesimally small potential of a first-time player doing it accidentally, being like, why does this feel weird? And why am I in areas that I feel like I can't do things in? Like, they didn't want that experience. I guarantee that's how they're thinking.
I know, but it's so dumb. From my perspective.
Anyways. Yeah, I see both. I can understand. Well, I guess that's enough Switch 2. I did want to spend maybe a little bit of time talking about our favorite DJ fighting game, DJ-based fighting game, Fatal Fury.
You're talking about soccer fighting game, right?
God.
Soccer? Oh, is it a soccer fighting game? Oh, yeah I guess so, right. Now too.
Oh, God.
I don't know. Nick, do you want to explain what's going on? What is going on? Do we know what's going on?
I will try to avoid conjecture and speak on facts.
AMO Kenzoku. We support conjecture here.
For those unaware, Fatal Fury City of the Wolves is a proper sequel to Fatal Fury Mark of the Wolves, which was basically SNK's widely viewed as one of their best fighting games ever made. People often say that this is SNK's third strike, and I agree. It's a amazing game. Yeah. Sam, you and I played it a lot back in the day.
A lot.
I was super excited to hear they're bringing it back. It's got new stuff in it. It's 3D, 2D, but it actually doesn't look terrible, and I was getting excited. And then randomly, about 3 weeks ago, they announced guest character. I'm like, oh, is it a Street Fighter character? No, guest character, Cristiano Ronaldo, the soccer player. For Al Nassr in the UAE. And I'm like, what? And then a week later, they announced guest character, Salvatore Ganacci. I'm like, I don't even know who this is. Turns out is a DJ of European descent who oftentimes does a lot of shows in Saudi Arabia and Brunei and like Dubai. So where I'm going with this is in 2020, SNK, was, like 90-something percent of SNK was purchased by the MISC Foundation of Saudi Arabia, which is basically a consortium that is owned by the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. And funny enough, you know, people are like, uh-oh, is that going to influence their game design? And back then, SNK said, Saudi Arabia's 96% ownership does not affect us in any way. Well, I beg to differ. Cristiano Ronaldo has never once been mentioned in any fighting game, but I'm a pretty knowledgeable fighting game person, I would say. Mm-hmm. When compared to your average person, I'm probably somewhere in between, you know, hardcore and like, you know, moderate fan. Like, I definitely know my fighting game stuff. And nobody's ever talked about, I want to see more soccer players in my fighting games. And then I did a little bit of sniffing. I'm like, oh, right. He plays in the Saudi Pro League now. He plays for Al Nassr. So I'm like, uh-oh. And then I looked up Salvatore Ganacci, and sure enough, it's like, yeah, he does lots of shows in the UAE. I'm like, I see what's going on.
So that's so weird.
Yeah, I know. Like, part of me is like, you know, if this is what it took to get Fatal Fury back, I'll take two odd guest characters. As long as they're not broken top tier, because the last thing I want to see is Evo Grand Finals, Ronaldo versus Ganacci, and be like, oh dear God. But man. I haven't watched a lot of it because I got a little jaded and stopped watching footage of it. But apparently, at least Ronaldo was pretty strong, is what I'm seeing. So I'm slightly concerned about that.
Because it's just they're so boring though, like
they're like real
design
people.
Wise
and
yeah,
even like, the thing that is to me is even wilder is if you look at the Salvatore Ganacci like trailer, they basically just gave him Duck King's moves. I'm like, just put Duck King back in Fatal Fury then. He's a canon character. Like, he does all the breakdancing stuff and the split kicks and all the funky stuff. I'm like, that's 100% Duck King. So not only are they adding a weird guest character who's likely was browbeaten into the game, but his moveset is just ripped off from... It's not even a unique moveset. It's just ripped off from a legacy character that they haven't used in 20 years. So,
and now, and now they can't really put him in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's lame. I don't like it.
It leaves a bit of a weird taste in my mouth. So,
yeah. I mean, I was already kind of blah on the going 3D just because, I mean, SNK held out as 2D for so long.
Yeah, but I mean, everybody has to go this direction eventually. That's just the sad reality.
Is it because of the engines? Why? Is that what it is, or
no, it's perception. Like, if they're trying to get to a new audience, it has to be 3D. 2D will always have a ceiling on the new audience that brings in. Even though for a fighting game, 2D is king, in my opinion, like sprite based is king. It's the reality is that if you want to go beyond the core hardcore, and let's be real, fighting games are niche, right? Like the fan bases, even in gaming, is probably one of the most niche. Like, we are a very, very, people even called FGC people, like, they call FGC its own thing because it's like, yeah, man, fighting games are totally weird. And I agree.
Yeah.
It's part of the thing that I enjoyed about them. But at the same time, it's also makes them very inaccessible for average gamers. So I get what they're trying to do. This is, in my opinion, not the right way to do it.
Yeah. But,
you know, if this is what it takes, you know, Saudi money coming in to get a game out that otherwise wouldn't have been made, then, you know, I suppose it's better that this is the better of two evils. Because ultimately, I'd rather, at least this way we get to see like Mark of the Wolves kind of legacy live on, right?
Yeah, I kind of wish, like, there's room to, like, you don't have to go for, like, I agree, I think your take is pretty good, like, I think that tracks some, where, like, they're trying to go bigger, and to do that, 3D is probably the way to go, but, I don't know, there are other companies that are doing okay with just a smaller audience, but making 2D games. Boy, what is French Bread doing the...
Sure, but let's be real. Yeah. Their development team and costs are probably 1/20th of what SNK's are. Because if you're acquired by, you know, something that's owned by the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, they're expecting to make lots of money on it. And they're not going to be satisfied with a modest, you know, $7 million profit on a game. They're expecting tens of millions profit, yeah. I'm sure. And
that's true. That probably puts them in a tough spot where they're expected to make a bigger return, yeah. which kind of leads them down that road.
That being said, I don't think shoveling a soccer player and a DJ into a fighting game is the right answer. I think maybe having them make a sports-focused...
Oh, dude, that would be cool.
Like, Windjammers. SNK made Windjammers, which is possibly the coolest, air quotes, sports versus game I've ever played. Yeah. I don't know if you guys don't recall, that's the Frisbee, soccer, air quotes, one that...
It's like they actually pong made a basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Frisbee Pong, and it was in the arcades forever ago, and they actually made a sequel not that long ago, like maybe like 6-7 years ago. And they could try to do something like that with soccer players. Like, totally doable, I think. And then you can appeal more to the fan base that is there, because I don't think putting Ronaldo in Fatal Fury will bring soccer fans into Fatal Fury. I don't really see it.
I would love to see a fighting game with just famous sports players. Like, here's Ohtani, here's Michael Jordan.
Sure.
Like,
yeah, good luck making those licenses work. But yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I don't know. But like, I think that would be way more fun. Yeah, it's true. The licensing is probably
nightmare,
really tough. But yeah. But still, like, I don't know. That would be fun. But yeah, I guess just having a general like sports type, but unique sports fighting game would be cool too. But I think if you're talking like audience though, really the Windjammers style, like original competitive games, probably really small, or at least higher risk.
Yeah, I would agree. Although, also, I would assume the development cost would be a lot smaller than something as
probably true. Yeah.
So I don't know. That's above my pay grade. I don't care too much to think about that side of the industry. I just want to play games that I enjoy. So
yeah,
that's why I'm really looking forward to the Capcom Fighter Game Collection 2 out next month. Just be able to play CVS2 with good netcode. That's all I really want.
Heck yeah.
Play my old man game with good netcode.
Cool. Well, we're running out of time here. I did want to, before we wrap up, I wanted to really quickly, our last episode on Princess Mononoke, I had made some comment about Ghibli using getting access to Disney's CAPS system, which is basically their computer-based 2D animation system that had some 3D stuff in it. And I looked that up. I was wrong. Ghibli never had anything to do with CAPS. They actually used something called Toons, I think, which did... they did their 3D stuff with and 2D stuff. And Toons was bought by Duango, which is the company that I think they don't anymore, but they used to, they owned Nico Nico Doga and I think maybe originally 2chan. But they bought it and made it open source. So now it's like a free thing. And I guess Ghibli may still use it. For their animation. So that was interesting. Another interesting tidbit, side tidbit of that is when I was looking for stuff about CAPS, CAPS was originally made by Pixar. I didn't realize that. It was made by Pixar for Disney. You can actually see the original like work proposal is uploaded online.
So this was before Pixar was acquired by Disney then?
Yeah, yeah.
I think this was back when Steve Jobs still owned Pixar, isn't it?
Oh. Okay.
It might have even been before that.
Yeah, like true. It could have still been Lucas.
Yeah, it was the like mid to late 80s when they were writing this proposal. It's interesting.
And then Pixar's probably not currently, but as of whatever 15 years ago, they open source or opened up RenderMan to.
Oh yeah.
To anyone, which I was like, oh, that's kind of a cool thing, and it's also like. It's like, hey, here you go. It's kind of like for them, it's probably like, oh, well, this is a cool thing. If someone actually does something cool with this, then, hey, we got a great audition piece. And otherwise, yeah, sure, you can go try and make a Pixar movie. Have fun with that. Like, you'll see how much work it is. Good luck.
Yeah. Render Man's probably like the least of your things. Love your problems. Yeah, so that was, I just wanted to follow up on that. Did anybody have any final thoughts? Mike, I know you didn't have a whole lot to say. Did you have anything you wanted to mention before we wrap up?
Not too much, though. I'm making my mental list. What was that game that I, or anime that I was going to watch for Nick?
Guilty Gear.
Guilty Gear, right.
Yeah, just look up Guilty Gear on Crunchyroll. There should only be one entry. So.
Great, cool.
If there are two entries, then please tell us what the other one is.
Yeah, so actually, yeah, that's even a bigger surprise.
Dylan, do you have anything else you wanted to say in the end here?
Yeah, a very quick thing, and we'll come back around to it, but it's up on, with your, included in your Viz subscription. It is not in the app, but it is on the web. Mujina Into the Deep. Really cool seinen series. And the lettering is by a friend of the show. It's by the same might possibly be my favorite manga author these days, in Inio Asano, same person who did Goodnight Poon Poon, and other stuff. Mujin in the Deep, it's really cool, super seinen show. Like, there's,
I mean, Oyasumi Poon Poon is like put on a lot of people's like Mount Rushmores of seinen manga, so you know that's a literal all-timer. So
yeah, Mujina, it's cool. I really like it. Highly recommended.
Cool. Nick, how about you? Anything?
Nothing much, except that I just happened to be scrolling through my feed, and apparently it was just announced today that there's going to be, I really don't know how I feel about this, a Diablo and Berserk crossover. Maybe like 20 years ago I would have been excited, because that the state Diablo and Blizzard were in back then aligned more, but now it just feels really kind of, I don't know, just ick to me. Especially with Muta no longer with us. I don't like it, the fact that they're being so liberal with the Berserk IP. Diablo 4 is contentious, to say the least, is contentious in the ARPG crowd right now. I don't know how I feel about that. And especially how deep this collaboration goes. If it's literally just like, oh, you got the Dragon Slayer armor, then I'll kind of be like, yeah, that's not enough, guys. The microtransaction they're going to charge $50 for is not enough to get me interested here. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. That's just, such is the state of gaming.
Yeah, right. These days it's a wild world out there. I will say it's kind of an embarrassment of riches though at the same time, right? Like, so
that's true. It's almost like analogous to the anime industry, right? There's like so much out there now and lots of good, which is great. Like, mm-hmm. There's more anime I want to watch than I can watch right now.
Yes.
And same with games. Games could literally stop being developed from here on out, and I probably will still have games I want to play that I haven't played for the next probably 30 years of my life.
Yeah. So, I've basically played only FromSoft games for like the last 3 years.
So. Yeah, I mean, Destiny 2 literally had owned my soul for the last 7 years, and now I'm finally through it, and I'm like, I still have a huge catalog of things to get through here, guys.
Yeah, I haven't stopped buying games, I just haven't been playing it.
Eventually, I'll get through all the main quests in Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah, let me know in 8 more years.
Eventually, yeah. That's just the main quest. That's not the side quest.
All right, cool. Well, with that, we will wrap up. And sorry, we lied previously about that we would be talking about Perfect Blue this week. But this time, we promise, next week, we will be discussing Satoshi Kon's Perfect Blue. So you have more time. If you didn't watch it already, go watch it.
It's on. Well, I promise it won't be next week, but...
Well, sorry, next week. Not next time. Next time. It will not be next... Yeah. Well, not for you guys. Maybe for us. Who knows? All right. With that, this is AMO Kenzoku signing off. Sadaba.